It's on the PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii U. Oh. So you can take your gamepad screen, and you can keep all of Kenshiro's little hygiene items in it, just like his hair gel, and his perfume, so he smells like man, and all the things he uses to keep his chest waxed, all on your little screen down below. So you don't. So, because God forbid you would have to push the triangle button to go to a main menu.
Kaze from the anime Mayu Mao Yusha by the artist Yoko. And this is episode 165 of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, where our sole mission is and always will be what, boys?
To make your anime addiction worse.
That's what I thought. I'm Chiaki, and of course I am joined by my co-hosts, or rather just other hosts, not really co-hosts. We're all even here. We're all on the same level.
Equality,
yes. I'm joined by Mr. Cram, as you can hear, preaching equality.
Hello.
And, of course, Mitsugi.
Hello, how's everybody today?
Are you already hating Mitsugi?
I'm doing well. Doing well this morning, actually. Thank you very much.
Oh. I heard you were getting help for that, so.
I am.
Okay. So, you can find us at aaapodcast.com, iTunes. Don't forget to give us a rating on iTunes, especially if you like us. Any ratings are good, but written ratings are great because we love to read them. Facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast, where you can like us to get a bunch of updates and fun questions that we post throughout the week to make you think about your anime fandom even more. Follow us on Twitter to get our photo page, which Chiaki is snapping photos all across Japan, along with Cram and Mitsugi, to post some great photos of life over here and, well, examples of anime ingrained in Japanese culture. And of course, we broadcast live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. EST on ustream.tv. But if you can remember, aaapodcast.com, we have links to all of those.
Yeah, we could have a discussion about life in Japan for like 10 straight episodes.
We probably could.
It'd be very enlightening for most of the listeners.
We need to have another Life in Japan episode.
We do.
Soon.
Yeah. I agree.
It might be more. It actually might be more enjoyable for listeners than anything else we could do. It is a perspective that we offer that most of other podcasts can't offer. So,
and
might
we're
as well.
Proud to offer it. So, anyways, new forum members, welcome Tobias3x, Icy Rose, maybe that's...
Yeah, that's right.
And Daft Hentai. My name of the week is going to be Daft Hentai.
Oh, I wanted that one.
Okay, I'll take Icy Rose.
Okay, Daft Hentai, I got it.
I'm taking Tobias3x.
Trivia. The answer this week was Magic Knight Rayearth. Those who got it correct was Reiji, Astrophysics, Kaze-kun, and Madly Mudkip. And the winner for the week was Manly Mudkip. So, congratulations.
What a fun name.
It is a fun name.
A Manly Mudkip.
And the winner for the month was Kenshiko33. So, congratulations.
There's also going to be a change to trivia, starting with this next round. Previously, we have been using a system where I receive votes in I receive answers in my mailbox, and then all of the correct answers are selected at random for a weekly winner, and then the four weekly winners are selected at random for the week for the monthly winner. But now, in addition to doing that, because it's not changing, we are also going to have a running 6-month point total on the front page of the website. So, for example, if you get a question right, you might get 10 points, and then that will go on the front page of the website. So you all are competing against each other in the long term, and there will be some greater prize at the end of 6 months that is yet to be determined. And I think that the point value of each question will be determined by how many people get the answer correct. So if it's very difficult and only 3 people get it, maybe it's worth 50 points. But if 25 people get it, maybe it's only worth 10 points. So keep an eye out for that. It'll make things more competitive and give more of an opportunity to get some other stuff.
I'm sure there'll be a post on the forums explaining all of the new rules that really don't change anything you have to do on your end. But there'll be a post on the forum, so if you're not a member of our forums yet, strongly recommend doing that.
You can capture the glory by having your name at the top of the leaderboard.
Exactly, exactly. And of course, to participate in trivia, you do have to be a member of the forum, so. All right, we have some An Almighty Anime Mailbag. How to submit mailbags, you wonder? Go to aapodcast.com and click on the tab called Mailbag. We made this incredibly difficult for you to accomplish. The first one comes from Retro Kaiser. Like to know who the females, so Kimiko is not with us, so I'm guessing that's just me, think is the most sexy female in anime for the title of Miss Sexy. Most sexy female in
this
anime.
This question's not even for me. I just sit here and listen to you answer.
Well, if you guys want to share your opinions, I mean, we can see who we all end up thinking of. Though my initial reaction was Revy from Black Lagoon. I think she's really hot. Because I like strong women. And she has a good figure. She's not a twig. And I'm not a fan of the femme fatale kind of mantra. So
I'm not agreeing with you about this. How about you, Cram?
No, I can't say that, no.
Revy's hot, but she's kind of like a trashy psychopath. And I don't think I'd want to spend even 5 minutes in the same room with her.
I'd say Julia from Bebop.
I would say she's better than Revy.
I've cosplayed Julia, so I can concede to Julia.
Oh, snap.
I don't know. I think you can probably do better than that one, too. But at the moment, I'm having trouble.
I don't know. I'm having trouble, too, thinking of...
One of the most beautiful anime characters that I've ever seen, and every time I see a picture of this character, I once again think, wow, really beautiful, is Cosette from Les Portraits des Petites Cosettes. She is drawn so gorgeously. Can't really say she's sexy or hot or whatever, because I think she's only like, she's definitely not an adult.
Well, I think there's also, to me, there's a difference between sexy, hot, and beautiful, and cute. Like, they can overlap, but... To me, there are a lot of girls that I would say, she's really sexy, but I wouldn't necessarily say, oh my god, she's beautiful.
Can I cheat and say Ariel from The Little Mermaid?
Oh my god.
That's way cheating, but I love The Little Mermaid.
You have a mermaid fetish. Fish fetish.
All right, well, one of you boys like to read our other mailbag?
Yeah, I can do that. Let's see. So this one comes from... Marikish Tart. Is that right? Marikish Tart. Okay. I just want to know which anime character would you sleep with, rape, and send to the layers of hell with Moet?
Wow. I don't think I was going to read all of this question.
I just went into it, you know, I barreled through it. Let's decipher the question first, and then we'll figure out what we're going to say.
Thank you for the very inappropriate mailbag question.
I'm not comfortable saying I'd rape anyone or anything.
Right, yes.
Can I just say that? That's really uncomfortable.
I think that the approach to this question was more along the lines of, you know, would you do her, would you marry her, would you kill her? You know that game?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so I think that's what this person is asking is sleep with, rape them, or send them to hell.
I'd
I think
rather,
we played this game before.
Yeah, I'd rather change it to the do, marry, and...
Yeah, let's just change it.
this question makes me very uncomfortable.
We don't endorse rape here on the AAA podcast.
No, not at all.
Even though this is Japan.
Yeah.
So I would sleep with Iria from Zyrum. Every time someone asks a question like this, I'm going to say Iria.
I would sleep with Spike from Cowboy Bebop because I think he's emotionally broken and I wouldn't want to have a relationship, but I'd totally sleep with him.
I would also sleep with Spike from Cowboy Bebop.
Cram!
No, probably Julia. I mean, that just goes back to the other question. But yeah.
Maybe we could have a really awesome and slightly awkward the next morning. Kinda.
Well, if we have to pick men, I would sleep with JoJo.
JoJo?
Yeah.
He would rip you apart.
Well, I don't... Regardless, it's so homoerotic. It's like, it just has to happen.
Oh, my God. Oh, would I want to sleep with Spike or JoJo?
Which JoJo? There's two of them at this point in the anime.
I would have to say the first JoJo just because I would fear less that he would leave me for another man.
I think there's a lot more man in JoJo. JoJo is a lot more of a person.
It's very manly.
Yeah, there's a lot of beef there. But I don't know, who would you marry? So I would sleep with Julie. I wouldn't marry her. That's a damaged woman.
Yeah, kind of like Spike.
Yeah, kind of like Spike.
I said this once before on the podcast about 100 episodes ago, and I'll say it again because I don't expect that anybody that listened 100 episodes ago is still listening. But, and if you are, God bless you. But I once proposed to Naushka on Facebook.
Oh, yes, he
and
did.
And she flatly rejected me, but because she was already married to the forest, as she said. But should she change her mind, I would marry Naushka.
Mitsuki, isn't she like 15?
Isn't that legal in Japan, actually?
Yes. Correction. Totally okay.
She was 15, but the movie came out like 23 years ago. And this is Japan. It's like, oh, she's 15? Oh, that's perfectly, like, that's smack dab within the range of okay.
I actually think that is okay in Japan. I think you can get married. Is it 15 or 16?
I think it's 15.
I think it's 15 also. Yeah. I think you can get married at 15.
The legal age of consent in Japan is 13.
I would probably marry Deedlit from Lotus.
Deedlit. Deedlit is hotter than Julia.
Actually, yeah, I think you might be right. But so yeah, I would totally marry.
Good Deedlit. One. There are very few characters hotter than Deedlit.
Yeah. Damn. Deedlit's fine.
Damn. Really fine.
You know what? I'm gonna go with my childhood anime crush.
Oh god.
And I'm gonna say I'd marry Vegeta.
Vegeta!
The worst husband ever. That's the worst choice you could possibly
serving woman! Bring me a drying cloth at once!
Drip dry, you jerk! No, I think...
Oh my god, Vegeta. He'd be the worst husband ever. You'd never see him. And when you did see him, he'd treat you like shit.
But then
Where's my dinner?
But then I could give birth to Trunks and I could teach him how to love.
That's true. I think it's worth it to only, you know, give birth to the coolest Saiyajin ever.
Trunks? Really?
He's pretty cool, man.
Man, Goku's so much... Goku's the coolest.
Yeah, but he's kind of dumb. He's cool. He's cool. Don't get me wrong, but he's kind
of
dumb.
Goku. In all fairness, a bunch of them are dumb.
Like he's only like two steps better than like a feral child. Like let's be honest.
Okay. So I would send whatever the blue haired character from Lucky Star is.
She's Kagami or something.
She's
like
going
that.
To hell. I don't know what her name is.
She's not that bad. Come on.
I made it a personal point not to remember her name because of who she is. And not only is she going to hell, but she's going to land on a very large, pointy spike. And she's going to just be impaled there for all eternity. And all the other demons and anime characters that go to hell are going to walk around her and point at her and laugh every time they see her.
Can I take it back to a warm, fuzzy place just for a second? A secondary husband that would be okay with me because Vegeta would probably dump me. Hugh Mays from FMA. He's a great daddy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I think he's a good family man, so I wouldn't mind that. But as far as character, I'd send to hell. I would send... What's the name of the main character dude from Love Hina?
Kentaro? Is it
Kentaro?
Is that right?
Yeah, I'd send him to hell.
Okay.
Why?
Yeah, well, I mean,
yeah. What for about having, him makes him go to hell?
For being such a puss.
Oh, there are worse characters than him, okay?
For having all those women around him and making them go to bed every night with their battery-operated boyfriends out of frustration.
I have to do a harem character now. I would send... Oh, I can't remember her name, from Tenchi. I hate that show, but the purple-haired princess girl...
Oh, Ayaka?
Oh, I hate her! Oh, she's awful!
There are so many harem male characters weaker than Kentaro. There's the character from Handmaid May, who is so pathetic. There's a character from Sora no Otoshimono, who's equally as pathetic.
Haven't seen that one.
At least in like the Christmas special and things like that, he buys her a present and is taking it to her, you know, trying to have a relationship. And I'd say in Love Hina, it's mostly the other girls that keep screwing
it up. I want to kill him and make an example.
Well, you can kill him. I don't care.
You either hunt for that poon or you don't get it at all.
I have nothing. I have no reason to defend Love Hina. So anyway, shall we move on?
Yeah, that was fun.
that was like a nice little warm up for the show.
It was. I'm feeling good.
Okay, some quick announcements. As Mitsugi already mentioned, there's a change to trivia coming up, so look for that this coming month. Pretty much anything you have to do won't change in the process. Everything's on our end. So look for that. Anime Oscars with Felix Albuerne will be on February 17th, so that will be very enjoyable. Very excited for the red carpet and all of the events and to see who wins. And as normal, we're asking a bunch of other podcasts to participate in our anime Oscars and help us decide the winners. So if you listen to other anime podcasts, encourage them to participate. And if they haven't already been invited, which they probably have, but if they haven't, we'd gladly invite them to participate. Also, another quick mention, the Florida Anime Experience is coming up for Memorial Day weekend, May 24th to the 26th, 2013. Advance tickets are available online at floridaanime.com. Tickets at the door are $20 for Friday or Sunday and $25 for Saturday, $40 for the weekend. Children under three get in free with a paid adult, so you can start that anime addiction early. One of the main guests is Molly Flanagan, the voice of the English Naruto.
Believe it.
Yes, I believe it that she will be saying that way too much that day.
When and if she joins us live on the podcast,
yes,
I am going to make her say believe it several times.
Please don't.
Oh, it's happening.
Please don't.
It's
at
happening.
At least once. You gotta. I'm sorry.
And she's going to
say it again.
And I'm going to ask her to say it in the commercial drop for us.
I prefer when voice actors curse in their characters.
Check it out. My name is Miley Flanagan, voice of Naruto from Naruto, and I am an anime addict. Believe it.
That was lovely.
Spot on.
There's
Spot
a sample
on. Wow.
For you.
I think you should do that as use that as a demo reel for some voice acting, Mitsugi. So, today we are talking about recent must-play anime-themed video games, or just anime-themed video games in general, and then we will have some impressions on Hakenden, Ishida and Asakura, Chihayafuru 2, and a review on Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva to, well, keep it in the theme. So, don't go anywhere. You old anime fans out there who've been watching anime since your children were born, this is Chiaki, and this is your anime news break. For those of you in North America who are trying to firm up your convention schedule for the next year, Otakon has made it particularly, well, even more appealing to head out to their convention. They've recently announced that Takanori Nishikawa, the singer and actor who is better known as TM Revolution, will be at the August 9th to 11th convention in Baltimore, Maryland. He will hold a concert on August 10th. Now, if somehow you don't know this name, TM Revolution has performed a string of hit anime songs for none other than Bleach, De Grey Man, Darker Than Black, Rurouni Kenshin, and Soul Eater, just to name a few. So it's definitely a concert that if you can make it to, I wouldn't miss on the 10th at Otakon. Now, for those of you who are fans of classic space opera, Toei Animation has recently announced that its remake of Leiji Matsumoto's space pirate Captain Harlock will open this fall. This remake is one of two major remakes for Toei Animation. 3D remakes. Did I mention that part? 3D CG remakes of space pirate Captain Harlock and the robot anime series Daiku Maru Gai King. This was first announced back in 2010 that it made a pilot for a computer graphics remake and presented it at the Tokyo International Anime Fair. Toei the Animation then later presented a preview at France Annecy, the world's largest animation film festival, in 2011. So it's pretty exciting to see it coming to the theaters. In other news, for those of you who are fans of classic Chinese literature, the classic Chinese novel Suikoden, or Water Margin, is getting a remake in a television anime titled Tenpo Suikoden Neo, which has recently been greenlit. In the original story, a large band of outlaws are given amnesty by the government to fight foreign forces and rebels. So, let's wait and see how this remake turns out. And in other news, only appropriate for this episode especially, Sony has recently announced that it will be holding an event on February 20th at 6 p.m. EST for people to, and I quote, see the future. Everyone is currently expecting, including the Wall Street Journal, that Sony will be revealing its PS3 successor, aka, I hope, creatively named, the PS4. And for you anime video game lovers living in the UK, the wait is over. Namco Bandai UK has released the game Ni no Kuni Wrath of the White Witch this past Friday, February 1st. So if you're tired of hearing about it and want to play it yourself, which you should, go out and get it at your local game store. This was Chiaki, and this was your Anime News Break. Don't go anywhere, because you bet we'll continue making your anime addiction worse when we're back to the show soon.
It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. It's about music and video games and other stuff.
Are you sure that was the moon and not just Australia painted gray?
You know what? If you knock me out, paint Australia gray, and then tell me it's the moon, I'll get over it.
You know, throwing flaming 2x4s into the audience. It's something you don't do if you're just like listening to NPR and sipping on decaf.
But if you did, that would make NPR so much more rad.
She says, oh, I pretty much like everything except rap and country. Then she says, have you heard of Nickelback?
Oh, God, no!
For all this and more, check out ozoneent.com/zonecast or find the Echo Chamber Podcast on iTunes.
Hey, Steve Bloom here, voice of Spike Spiegel, Vincent Valentine,
Leron from Gurren Lagann.
And I am a total anime addict, dude. Tune in, or else.
And we're back to the 165th episode of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. We've reached our main topic, where we are talking about some of the recent must-play anime video games. So, how did you boys approach this topic? I know, personally, I kind of tried to pick games that were either based off of anime, or anime came later after them, so kind of a chicken-and-the-egg type of scenario, or games that were specifically in an anime style. So that if someone was an anime fan, they'd pick up the game and think, this looks like an anime, but maybe doesn't necessarily have anime source material that came before or after.
It's pretty simple for me. I thought of games that had come out in the last year, and then I sort of thought of games that are coming out within maybe the next month, but mostly games that had either come out recently or, you know, within the last 6 months maybe.
Yeah, I mean, basically the same as you said for me as well. Just if they have an anime style or they're based on some existing anime-related source material, I kind of stayed away from things that were originally a game and then became an anime later.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, basically the same.
All right. So, my first game that I immediately thought of that I put on the list was Persona 4 Arena. This was released in August 6, 2012, so it did come out a little bit ago. I know it's, it had, by the way, the release date is the North American release date. That's the date that I went off of, assuming it has a North American release date. But it was released in the States on August 6, 2012. It's a fighting game, but it has kind of a splash of RPG and storyline aspects. It was released on the PS3 and the Xbox 360, and the fighting aspects of the game are really great for this game. And especially if you love the Persona franchise, and especially Persona 4, which I think almost everyone does, because that game and, well, the anime, I guess, wasn't necessarily as fantastic as the game.
The anime was pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good, but the game was amazing.
Practically no other game is as good as Persona 4 in terms of RPGs. I mean, it's extremely good.
But the fighting aspect of the game is great, and of course you wield personas and whatnot as you are fighting, but the story mode of the game is very dialogue heavy, and it's very much clicking through dialogues, be it an internal monologue or external monologue or dialogue. It's almost a little bit, the vibe I get from it is almost a little bit like a visual novel. In the sense of that you're kind of more reading through a visual novel and there's pictures and stuff happening on the screen, but you're not as much making that many decisions that influence the events that are happening. And the other thing for it is I do feel that it depends on some previous knowledge of the Persona franchise, be it watching the anime or playing a previous game, because I have had some friends who said that they didn't like the story mode at all, because it was so character-driven, and they had no connection with the characters. They were people who like fighting games and picked it up because of that.
The problem that I had with this game, and granted I have limited experience with it, I only played the demo, but the problem I had with it is that the fighting engine kind of feels like it comes from that Atlus fighting game school of thought where faster is better. And I just can't keep up with that stuff. Like, as much as I love the concept of the Marvel vs. Capcom games, they are just too fast for me. I'm more of kind of a Street Fighter kind of guy. And I don't find that I enjoy those kind of games, like the ones that have come out recently, like BlazBlue or even Skullgirls or games like that. But yeah, if you like that kind of fighter, then I think you'll probably like the game mechanics themselves. But if you're more like me and you kind of like a little bit more laid-back Street Fighter style, then you might not like it.
I also put this on there as a final note for games that it is available. I put a game ranking score. GameRankings.com is a website that I generally trust because it's an aggregate score of pretty much every other major review out there.
Yeah.
So I know it's not necessarily a perfect system. Like, I mean, nothing is a perfect system, but I generally trust what the reviews, and I generally agree with them. So this has a 85.95, so 86% on GameRankings.com.
My experience is that anything above an 84 is a very good game.
Okay.
Maybe an 84, I'll say.
So, what other games in your experience should be played, Mitsugi?
Well, recently there's a new Dragon Quest game. Well, it's not new, but it's being ported to the DS in Japan. So Dragon Quest VII, which is probably the longest RPG ever made.
I never finished it. I started playing this back in high school and never ended up finishing it, and I just restarted it, actually the original PS1 version recently, and I know it's going to take me, I mean, at least 100 hours. Main quest, no side quest. It's notorious for being like right at or just over 100 hours for all that.
So, it was originally published, originally released in North America back in 2001.
Yeah.
I guess, so, under the title of Dragon Warrior 7, so if you're confused, you're like, what's Dragon Quest 7?
Yeah, it was the last, of the Dragon Quest games to come out in the States, with the Dragon Warrior banner.
But, it's officially being released in Japan on February 7th, 2013, this year, so, as Dragon Warrior 7 on the 3DS. So,
is it being released as Dragon Warrior 7 in the States again? I don't know.
I think it's far off. Like, I don't.
It's probably a ways off. Yeah, for a game that long, localization is going to be kind of a pain.
Yeah, if at all. But for those of you that have the ability to play Japanese games, and so, a fair amount of you do,
As far as bang for your buck, though, like if it's the same price as your average 3DS game, I would say that you're getting a lot more actual game time.
Oh,
a lot of game time, yeah. Just hearing the Dragon Quest music makes me want to play it. It doesn't matter
and
how good it
really
is.
It looks really good. That's one thing that I think the other game lacked was that the game for the PS1 was only two discs, but it was, you know, over 100 hours just for the main quest. And you can see the limitations in the graphics because it's a pretty ugly game.
It is pretty. I was actually quite surprised because it came out roughly close to the same time that Final Fantasy X came out.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
It looked like Brave Fencer Musashi.
Yeah. It was toward the end of the PlayStation, the original PlayStation's life cycle. And I mean, usually at the end of a life cycle, developers have learned how to use the tools that they've learned and create games. Like, I think the best example is Shadow of the Colossus for the end of the PS2's life cycle. I feel like that is
that game's amazing.
The ultimate culmination of everything that was learned, you know, the collected knowledge of how to make a game for the PS2. And we got that, and then the PlayStation 2 was done.
And a beautiful vision. And,
oh, yeah. Just amazing.
And the...
Dragon Warrior 7 is not that game.
I have to... In terms of just PS1 versus PS1, I compare Dragon Warrior 7 to Final Fantasy 9. I think they came out relatively the same time, within a year, I think, and both on PS1. Maybe just to show you the massive budget that all the Final Fantasy games have, because we both know Final Fantasy 9 looks pretty damn good.
Yeah.
But Dragon Warrior 7 did not look so good.
But yeah, the port,
the
3DS port looks really great. If you've played any of the Dragon Quest games that they've put out on the DS recently, it looks like that, but even better because it's on the 3DS now. So
I do have to admit, I have been, from what I've seen, relatively impressed with the 3DS graphic capabilities. I mean, it's still not. I'm not trying to be a hater, but like, if you're going for graphics, it's still not comparable to the Vita.
But it is to the PSP.
Yeah, yeah, but so. But the graphics are really solid on it, and I've been impressed by that. So
here's Dragon Quest is probably the most famous game series in Japan.
Yeah, probably.
The story begins with the father of the protagonist. He brings home a map from a fishing trip, and the map suggests that the protagonist and his friends, that the world has had at some point many continents. Even though now there's only this tiny little island called Estard, and so the two of them find a way to travel back to the past. I haven't played it, but hopefully this is all correct. Where the continents still existed, the continents are facing serious problems that threaten their existence, and the protagonist and his friends have to resolve all the problems. So it's kind of like a time travel game. So just the fact that it's so well known in Japan, everybody should at least think about it, pick it up maybe.
So one of the other games that I put on, and this is the oldest game that I put on. This game was released on September 6, 2011. So this was maybe kind of the cusp of what you could really call recent. But is Disgaea 4, A Promise Unforgotten. And I had to put a game from the Disgaea franchise on here just because I have a love of tactics turn-based RPGs, and they are dying. It pains me to say it, but they really are. They're kind of starting to fade away or become super, super, super niche. And I love them. Yeah. So I wanted to put this on here. And I think there has been a Disgaea anime. This is one of those chicken and the egg scenario.
And it's terrible.
The anime came after the game. So, the anime came out back in 2006, but the original game came out in 2003 with Disgaea Hour of Darkness, which came out on the PS2, which if you love tactics games at all, play, like, right now, like, yesterday. Go back in time and play it yesterday. But Disgaea 4 takes place in the Netherworld setting of the previous Disgaea games, but the developers decided to focus on the politics of the world foremost, rather than another kind of arcing story, so that's kind of how they keep it fresh and whatnot for this game. But it came out on the PS3, strictly a turn-based strategy RPG. The game ranking score was 82.53%.
Here's the deal with Disgaea. I love Disgaea 1. I think it's the best strategy RPG ever.
Really?
That's what I think.
Better than Final Fantasy Tactics?
The longevity of that of Disgaea 1 is so ridiculous. I mean,
it's great. Yeah, I loved it when I played it.
The story is hilarious. The battle system is very deep and allows you to do a lot of different things. Every item has a 100-floor dungeon. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I'm level, like, 700 in that game, and I'm well short of being able to clear all the, like, extra bonus levels.
Which is ridiculous if you think about it.
But Disgaea 2, 3, Disgaea 2 and 3 have in turn been worse and worse. Yeah. And so I just have, I'm not saying don't play Disgaea 4, give it a try, I guess, but considering how horrible Disgaea 3 was compared to the first one.
What system did this come out for?
This is just PS3.
Okay.
The Disgaea games, I think, are entirely a Sony exclusive franchise.
So, I don't know. I love Disgaea, but I would approach this game with
caution.
Caution, yeah.
And then buy the original.
Yeah, and then get the original. I bet you can get it on PSN or something for $10. So, because it's really good. So, I just throw it out here, the biggest title we've got, Ni No Kuni.
Yeah!
Didn't want to put it first, you know, because that's how, you know, we'd talk about it forever, but Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, JRPG, came out very recently in the States, within the last 3 weeks.
But a long time ago in Japan.
Yeah. The localization for this game took
2 years.
Forever.
Yeah, it took 2 years, which is just crazy. I played this the first year I came here, probably like a month. I came here in the summer of 2010, and a month after I got here, I went to the Tokyo Game Show, and I played the demos for this on the DS and the PS3, and then purchased the DS version that winter season. And now And the PS3 game came out about the same time as the DS version in Japan, and then now we're 2 years later, and the States is finally getting the PS3 version. I don't think there are any plans to release the DS version right now.
I haven't heard anything.
No, I haven't either. I've played a lot of the DS version and only just the demo of the PS3 version, but they're both, from what I can tell, very, very good.
So,
you know what I do have to say that I like about the localization choices of this game is I like that they didn't change the title.
Yeah.
That it's still Ni No Kuni. I think the whatever quote after Wrath of the White Witch, I think in Japanese that's slightly different. But I love it when localization teams make choices to try to keep the game, I don't know, pure or like an homage to where it came from, rather than being like, let's make everything Western that we possibly can about it. So I like that.
So this game is it's the top of the game on this list for me, and for many different reasons. First of all, the art is done by Studio Ghibli. So it's like you're playing an 80-hour of Studio Ghibli anime, which is enough reason to buy it already.
The music matches.
The original soundtrack is done by Joe Hisaishi, who personally does all of the music for all of Miyazaki's films. Which, if you've watched any Miyazaki films, you know that the music is incredible. But it gets better from there, right? Because, first of all, this is one of the only JRPGs in years that I actually have faith in being good. Granted, I haven't played it yet, but also, the story is so fantasiful. It revolves around a 13-year-old boy, Oliver, whose mother suddenly dies after rescuing him from drowning, and as Oliver's crying over her body, his tears create this, cause his doll that he has to come to life, and his name's Drippy in the English version.
And he really is a god of death.
And he gives Oliver...
Like Totoro.
He gives Oliver a magic book that allows him to use the power of magic and enter the world of Ni No Kuni, which is sort of a parallel world to Oliver's reality. And the book, if you live in Japan, you got it for free. If you're in the States, you can get it with the Platinum Edition. But it's like a 300-page hardbound book, and every page is full of these amazing...
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Amazingly detailed illustrations. It's nothing... I've never seen anything like it before. Like, Lunar, back in the day, came with a little hardbound book that was like 100...
The instruction manual, yeah.
It was like 100 pages. It was in full color. Mm. This thing is like... It looks like a volume of an encyclopedia.
Yeah, it's thick, hardbound. I mean, just amazing.
With like gems, I know they're like plastic, but still, it has a total effect. Like set into the cover, mm-hmm. and it's perfect.
They have every single monster drawn in amazing detail on the pages, and like a bestiary. It has different pages that have the spell patterns on them, because on the DS you have to use the the stick to whatever you call the stick, the stylus to draw the spells, kind of like in Okami. Anyway, so I don't know a lot of the details of the game as the game gets deep into it, but I know that there's a an evil presence in the world that's, you know, Oliver's mission to stop the evil, and that the game also has, according to IGN, Pokemon type elements where you fight with familiars and you can evolve them.
Oh,
and other things,
my
but,
God.
So we'll see if that's
I
true.
I didn't get that experience from the demo that I played, but yeah, that sounds pretty good.
So I just looked on eBay for funsies. There is the Ni No Kuni Wizards Edition Companion Book. So just the book from the Wizard Edition in English, so from the States, on eBay for $155.
What?
It has 5 days left, and it has 3 bids.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It might be worth it.
But
I don't know. It's pretty amazing.
But you can get the... Also on eBay, the next listing, you can get the import Ni No Kuni book for $20.
But that auction has 23 days left.
Yeah.
So here's one for $250.
It's, oh, yeah.
It's legit. This game is legit. So you should go get it, whether you have the book or not. And
part of it is that, like, for the DS version, I don't know if this is true for the PS3 version, because I know in Japan the PS3 version did not come with a book. But the DS version came with a book because you needed it. You have to have the book in order to play the DS version. It's the only way to get the strokes for the spells on the touchpad. So I think this might be just a collector's thing in the States, and that's why it costs money, because, like I said before, I think there are no plans to release the DS version at this time, so the book is just kind of bonus.
So by the way, for funsies, the books that are cheaper are shipping from Hong Kong. I just found a Japanese book. And granted, it's a buy it now, not an auction, but the Japanese version for also $150.
Looks like I'm going to be buying up some of these and eBaying.
You should.
Man, they're so cheap over here. I can go down to the local recycle shop and get a whole set with the game and the book for like 1,700 yen or something, like $20.
Turn it around. Make some mad bang.
Oh, here we go. Here's $90.
So right on. This game is currently receiving an average score online of an 87, which is really good for a JRPG, because reviewers hate JRPGs nowadays. Even, you remember the game Lost Odyssey?
Yeah.
Really solid.
It was
game,
solid.
Right?
Unabashedly Final Fantasy, though.
That game's average score over 70 reviews is not even an 80. It's a 79.
That's kind of crazy.
So it's like, reviewers hate JRPGs. So if Lost Odyssey got a 79... Now, imagine 8% points better than that, and you've got, like, a really legit, awesome game. So, not even the Final Fantasy games get like, 90s nowadays.
Not really.
They're getting, like, 84s. I mean, JRPGs... If it's not Skyrim or Call of Duty, it's not good.
Well, yeah, but, like,
nowadays.
If you go back and you look on Metacritic for, like, Final Fantasy VII reviews or Final Fantasy IX reviews or something like that, I think there are people who have gone back and reviewed those games with the, you know, kind of nostalgia glasses on, and you can see that those games get, like, probably over 85 or maybe even over 90 in some cases.
Anyways, I'd like to blitzkrieg through one or two or three games, if that's all right with you guys.
Yeah, let's do it.
The original Final Fantasy VII has a 92 on here. Over 30 reviews. Okay, sorry.
One last thing I do want to say about Ni No Kuni is that I don't think this sold very well in Japan, so if you guys want the DS version in the States, buy the PS3 version and tell all your friends to buy, like, two or three copies of it, too.
And buy it, for heaven's sake, buy it legally.
Yes. Yes, please.
Not just buy it legally, but buy it new. I love GameStop and companies like that resell, and I get it, you can get it like $5 or $10 cheaper, but it doesn't help the game company at all. And if you want Ghibli to potentially make more games, they got to make more money off of it. Let's just face it, that's the story.
Ghibli makes plenty of money.
I know, but if they do well in the game market...
Yeah, I guess. In this time of animation studios and animation production companies going out of business, Ghibli turns like $190 million profit every year. So they're doing good, but
all right.
Still buy it legally.
So some Blitzkrieg. One Piece, Pirate Warriors. It's an action game, came out on the PS3. This game incorporates elements from the previous One Piece games as well as the Dynasty Warriors franchise. So it kind of has that Dynasty Warriors action feel. There are three modes.
Too.
Story, adventure, and battle. In all of which you control Luffy and the Straw Hat crew to work through the plot and defeat the rival pirates. Came out September 25th, 2012 in the States, probably way before that in Japan. The game ranking score is 65.63%. So I imagine this is probably one of those more, this game is mindless fun, don't expect much from it, and probably a must play if you're a One Piece fan, but if, or like a diehard anime fan that wants to play any anime game that comes out.
Or a Dynasty Warriors fan.
Yeah, I mean, or it's Dynasty fun. Warriors.
The mechanics are really exactly the same, and it's a lot of fun if repetitive.
But, so, One Piece, Pirate Warriors, for you fans of the One Piece franchise, which is pretty much half of Japan over here. Another game that's a part of a big shonen franchise, Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Generations. Of course, there's been a ton of Naruto fighting games. It is a fighting game. Came out on the PS3 and the Xbox 360 March 13th, 2012. The game ranking score is slightly higher than One Piece at 75.5%. It continues elements from the previous Naruto games, such as online tournaments and story mode, but it's also added some elements such as a technique meter and a beast mode to kind of upgrade its play a little bit. So if you're a fan of the franchise, again, it probably is great. If you're a fan of fighting games in general, probably something you must play. But if you're not a Naruto fan and not a fighting game fan, it's probably not something that is going to be a must play for you. So, and then one other game that kind of is my anime-esque style, if you want to try something that isn't necessarily based off of anything, but is in the anime style, it's a 2D fighter called Skullgirls. It's out for the PS3, Xbox 360, and PC, all for download. You can download it for $14.99 off the PSN, the PS Network. It's a 2D fighting game, and as Cram mentioned earlier, it's one of those fast-paced kind of style fighting games. But it's a collaboration between Revenge Labs and Autumn Games, and it features hand-drawn animation, of course, in an anime style, and that was really what kind of sold me on it, was that...
It's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, it is definitely beautiful.
Is that it has some fantastic animation, and a full six-button play if you're, like, a hardcore fighter fan. I'm pretty sure it's designed to, like, go with fight sticks and whatnot.
Fight stick!
But it came out April 10th, 2012, and the game ranking score is 83%. So it's a pretty high game ranking score. But I wanted to put that on there, as I said, just for a game option if you're looking for a game that maybe isn't based off something, you want to try something new, or I know a lot of people really like indie games, like those downloadable yeah. kind of indie game kind of...
And there is a demo available, so if you want to try before you buy, you can do that.
So, alright, that was my Blitzkrieg. Do any of you have... I have a few more that I can keep Blitzkrieging through, but I figure I'd give you boys a chance to talk if you had any you wanted to mention.
No, I'm good. Someone in the chat mentioned the Dynasty Warriors Gundam games. I've played the... I don't know how many there are now. I know I've played the first
100!
But, yeah, they're all right. I mean, if you like Dynasty Warriors, again, like, all those games tend to kind of be the same.
I played the hell out of Dynasty Warriors 4. It was embarrassing how many hours I put on that game. Yeah. I'm embarrassed. I admit it. I'm sorry.
Mindless killing just hundreds and thousands of people.
We did everything in that game. God, it took forever. Anyway, so I have another game.
Okay, go for it.
So... Fist of the North Star, Ken's Rage.
Woo!
Ken's Rage 2. Hokuto Shinken! Sorry. Had to do that.
More Dynasty Warriors games, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
We just killed a man right now.
Yeah. So it's described as, it's similar to the first Ken's Rage game, which is in that it's even closer to Dynasty Warriors than ever before. So, basically, there's more people to kill, the hordes of men are thicker, and, you know, you can rip people's hearts out, and I'm looking at
pictures... The men are thicker.
I'm looking at pictures on Google, and this game is like, it's a, take Dynasty Warriors, and let's say you've come in contact with an enemy general, you know, and you have those, like, mini battle things, and rather than just hack at him until he dies, there's a picture of Ken doing, like, 1,000 leg kick on this dude, and his body is like, it's like exploding, and there's blood exploding out of every part of this guy's body. And then there's another dude who's literally like ripping someone's torso in half and just throwing his body in different directions, and there's blood everywhere. I have a feeling that this game is rated mature. If it ever comes to the States, which I don't think it will.
No, the other Ken's Rage made it to the States.
Yeah, it did.
Did it? Oh, well, I guess this one will too then, maybe. But, so, I imagine there's not much of a story. I'm just guessing, but really what you get to do is you get to tear your shirt off like Kenshiro and F up thousands of people in Dynasty Warrior style.
I like it.
Yeah. So this game is a beat-em-up, obviously. It's on the PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii U. Oh. So you can take your gamepad screen, and you can keep all of Kenshiro's little hygiene items in it, just like his hair gel, and his perfume, so he smells like man, and all the things he uses to keep his chest waxed, all on your little screen down below. So God forbid you would have to push the triangle button to go to a main menu, okay?
For his chest wax.
Its release date is February 2013, so.
Speaking of games, I think we've kind of moved into that segment of games that are not out in America, be it because they're very, very recent or they just never really made it to America. Professor Layton vs. Ace Attorney came out for the 3DS November 29th, 2012, here in Japan. I actually do have some amount of hope of this making it to the States. Because the Professor Layton franchise does fairly well in America.
The Ace Attorney games, I think, do all right over
there,
too.
Yeah, and they're popular also. So I do kind of... I didn't, granted, research too hard, but I didn't see anything right off the bat that said it was coming to America, but it wouldn't shock me. But 3DS...
Are Professor Layton and Phoenix Wright going to have a bromance? All right, so originally in this game, they're going to end up competing to solve the puzzles the fastest. But in the end, they just can't resist their love for one another, and they're mysteriously drawn to each other. And after a long makeout session, they will work together to solve the puzzles like never before.
Objection.
that one was good, Cram.
Thank you. I thought about it for a long time.
Anyways, so it's a crossover with the Ace Attorney franchise. Obviously. Layton and Wright and all of their respective crews and characters team up to solve a mystery in Labyrinth City. And what really kind of excites me about these two games is that it merges the two gameplay modes from both games. So there's the puzzle aspect, the puzzle mode of the Layton games, and there's a trial mode of the Ace Attorney games. I actually kind of Cram, you have a 3DS. If I bought this,
sure.
Can I play it on your 3DS?
Yes, of course.
Yay! Cause I actually do kinda wanna play this. But
Alright, cool.
Is it bad that I am more excited for Dead Space 3 than Ni No Kuni?
Yeah, that's a problem.
But can I just take a moment and ask you if you really understand how good Dead Space is?
I mean, I kind of understand. I haven't really played it.
I would say Dead Space is almost as good as Uncharted.
Oh, almost. Okay.
But anyway, so side tangent. So I have another game, and I included it because I felt like aggravating all of the Type Moon fans.
Because, aggravating?
Yeah, of course. Okay. It's like what I do, right?
It's his shtick.
Because it's my shtick. Because I know nothing about this game, so everything I say about it is going to be wrong. And if you don't get every little detail correct with the Type Moon people, you are crucified. So get the cross ready, okay? This is Fate/Extra CCC. It's a sequel to the game Fate Extra, which came out, I guess, a couple years ago. and the release date for this game is also in the future. It's coming out supposedly on February 21st, 2013. But I guess it's been pushed back to March, so not really surprising. But the game is set after the failed Holy Grail War, and it's not a direct continuation of Extra, but something more similar to a Sakura route, like the Rin and Ronnie routes in Extra. So I'm reading this off of something because I don't know enough about the game. But it looks good. I saw some pictures online of it, and it looks very pretty. The system, it's coming out for PSP, which for a PSP game, I thought it looked quite good. but it is brand new, so... But for those of you that like Type Moon games and love Fate, which is a lot of people who like Fate Zero, Fate Stay Night, you know, whatever it might be, check this game out. It's coming out on PSP, so you can easily play it on your American PSP because it's not region-coded. So you could order this game from Japan and pop it into your US PSP and play it. So,
well,
it's something you should probably look into if you like Type Moon. So I recommend it.
So I'll wrap up quick with two more games for those of you who are Mecha fans out there. And I know we have quite a few in our community. Two games worth mentioning. Again, the first one is only released in Japan, came out March 8th, 2012. I wouldn't hold hope for it to come over to America. But the PS3 isn't region coded. So yay! And it came out for the PS3. Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn. It's an action game, and the game plays in several different but intertwined story arcs that are told from the perspectives of their respective characters. The game features a flight system which allows characters to climb onto mobile suits and transform it into flight form. So, all in live time. So, it's kind of... That sounds really... I haven't played it, but it sounds really cool.
I'm so hesitant about this.
Well...
I've played Gundam games before, and they are not good.
Well, I mean, this one I put on there strictly because I know there's a lot of Gundam Unicorn fans out there, and I know there are a lot of games that I've played just because I'm a fan of whatever the game is selling.
Absolutely.
And even if the game itself isn't very good, if I'm a fan of the franchise or if I'm a fan of whatever,
oh my,
I'll play.
So there's like 100 Gundam games, and almost all of them are below a 70% on their average score on here. And some of them go as low as the 30s and the 40s. I don't know if Unicorn's on here. Here's the Dynasty Warriors Gundam games. They're all, you know... I hate to use, like, a percentage to judge these games, but what else do I have if I haven't played them?
Yeah, that's true.
So, but all the Dynasty Warriors Gundam games are in, like, the mid-50s.
Either way, this is a game that someone would have to pay a bunch of money to import anyway. So,
really? You don't think you can get it on Amazon.jp for the normal $70?
Maybe, I don't know.
Even still, you're paying $70 for a game and then $20 shipping. You're almost spending $100 on a game. In the States, that's almost two games right there. So I think if someone's bringing it into the States, they probably are going to play it no matter how good or bad it is, just for the sake of the fact that they're a huge Gundam or Gundam Unicorn fan.
Then again, I have heard that the Gundam Unicorn is quite amazing. So maybe the game is going to be really excellent.
And the last game on the list is maybe worth mentioning because it's kind of a look forward. I doubt that it will get released in America. But it's Macross 30, The Voice That Connects the Galaxy. It's a action...
It's so Macross.
It's an action RPG. It's being released for the PS3. And I do say being released because it won't come out until February 28th, 2013. So who knows if it's good or not. But if you're a huge Macross fan, you can keep an eye on it, because I'm pretty sure there are websites that allow you to pre-order and they'll ship it to you, even if it's from far away. But it commemorates the 30th anniversary of the Macross franchise, so if you're a Macross fan, it's almost like you have to buy it, because it's commemorating the 30th anniversary.
The marketing for this is really interesting, because I saw this last night while watching the 17th episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And so you have, like, this ridiculously homoerotic, manly anime where everybody's tearing each other in half, and then you have a commercial for what is, like, a pretty girly anime series game, right? I mean, Macross Frontier is basically a love triangle story.
It's not just Macross Frontier. The game...
Combines
elements from across almost all of the major Macross series woven into a new storyline. So you're going to have a bunch of... It's almost like, think of, like, the ultimate Macross crossover.
But in the commercial, there was a lot of Ronka and Cheryl.
Well, that's because for, like, 3 years, they were Japan's mascots.
Well, I was speaking merely in terms of its marketing.
But there is, if you love Macross and love mech and have the money, there is a special Super Galactic Box Edition that you can pre-order that you'll get a bunch of special Super Galactic bonuses. So,
outer space is good. And love triangles in space, even better.
So, those are some of our anime-themed video games or anime based off of video games or anime and video games that you might want to play. Coming next, we are going to do impressions on Hakenden and Ishida and Asakura and Chihayafuru 2, as well as a review on Professor Layton and the Internal Diva. So, stay tuned.
Yay, Professor Layton.
Hey all you anime fans out there who have just gotten into anime, this is Chiaki and this is your Anime News Break. First up, for you Gundam Age fans or just fans of the Gundam franchise in general, there is a new unspecified project in the works. Producer Masakazu Ogawa has posted on the official Gundam Age Twitter account that a project featuring the characters Asemu Asuno and Zehart Galette has been green-lit. No more details on the project exist, so who knows what type of project it is, but he has previously made notion that he would like to focus on the characters' days as students. In November 2012, Ogawa and Chiba released a rough sketch to the official Twitter account that was used to introduce characters for a possible new project, and a more recent sketch has been released, done by designer Michinori Chiba, featuring the characters on a sheet of paper with Japanese animation registration holes. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this project. In other news for you fans of Dragon Ball, the first film to come out in, well, forever, Dragon Ball Z Battle of the Gods, is, in my opinion, getting an appropriate welcome back to theaters. It will be the first Japanese film screened at IMAX Digital Theaters to be anime. Battle of the Gods is of course set during the lost decade of story, after the end of the battle with Majin Buu. For those of you who like to keep up with soon-to-be big names in the animation industry, someone to keep your eye on is Hiroyasu Ishida. He released an anime short not long ago called Fumiko's Confession, or Fumiko no Kokuhaku, that really enchanted the entire anime community. Animator Takeshi Nakamura of Fantastic Children and Catnap the Movie has now teamed up with Ishida and are working with Mode Films Incorporated and Studio Colorado to create two new anime projects. Studio Colorado began streaming a 46-second trailer for the new works this past week, which can be found on YouTube. The works will be titled Hinata no Aoi Shigurue and Shashinkan. I watched the trailer myself, and well, they look rather enchanting. So, I recommend keeping our eyes on this as something that will probably be worthwhile to watch. This was Chiaki, and this was your Anime News Break. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back to the show soon.
From the creators of Method to Madness.
You know, people on the game are like, get back there and start grenading people. And the guy's like, no, man, I'm talking to Nathan Fillion. Shut up.
It's the Alpha Counter Podcast.
People on bicycles are the biggest douchebags.
Hey, man, I'm riding green here.
Zero carbon footprint, bitches.
You know what my answer to that argument is? Thunk.
Find them on iTunes and alphacounter.com.
アニメアディクトアノニモスはエイミープレックスとご覧のスポンサーの提供でお送りいたします。
And we're back. I'm grooving out to that music. I dig it. I dig me some trapeze.We've reached the impression and reviews section of our podcast. So, who wants to go first?
I don't care. We could rock, paper, scissors for it.
All right.
Junkan Paul.
You ready? So, Saisho Gu, Junkan Paul. Aiko de Shou.
You don't know how to do it?
Well, I kept rock.
I thought there was something after.
Okay, so you won.
All right, you won.
All right, I'm going first. Okay, so my impression is for Ishida and Asakura. And this is by Studio Dax Productions and Hotline. I guess they're working together. This is not going to be a very long impression because the show didn't make much of an impression on me, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This follows the story of two high school boys. Ishida wants to open a flower shop with Asakura after graduation, and Asakura wants to teach at an all-girls school. That is their basic motivation for the main two characters. That's it.
Perverts.
The animation is passable, cut rate kind of stuff. The characters are ugly, but they're intentionally so. So it's kind of okay to look at. I don't know. I don't think it's a very attractive show, but I don't think it's supposed to be. So the music is fine. It's forgettable, passable. It's not distracting. It's not good. It's not bad. It's nothing. There is really no story. There's just so little to say about this because it's basically a two or three minute shows, and it feels like a series of non sequiturs and unfunny gags and random happenings that propel each 3 minute episode to its ending. The characters have very, very superficial motivations. Lots of people like the character of Asakura, like his classmates really like him, but Ishida is his best friend, but we don't really understand why everyone likes Asakura. Like, he has a big afro, and he kind of has this weird speaking pattern where he pauses before the last syllable of every sentence he says. I don't know, it's kind of strange.
So, like, 私の名前はクレアです。で、
す。Yes, exactly. That's exactly how he does it. So, let's see. So, there's a character that has really long teeth, like teeth that... He's got two front teeth that go all the way down to, like, his midsection. And he always tries to get in... Crazy. Crazy looking
like
dude.
Like a giant beaver?
Yeah, kinda.
What the hell?
But he always tries to get in Asakura's good graces, but is always physically abused by Ishida. Like, every single episode, the last episode I saw, he was straight up killed, but he'll probably come back very kind of like South Park Kenny-ish. But
oh my god, you killed... What's his name?
He killed Bucktooth. I don't know. And in the first episode, Asakura thinks that one of the female classmates with large breasts should become a porn star. And that's like...
What?
Just randomly. Like, they're kind of talking about their dreams. And it's like, well, she should clearly be a porn star. And then she starts crying and whatever. And it's... I don't know. It's just, it's totally random.
And I think you're a whore.
And then, I guess, in a couple of episodes ago, maybe episode 3... the male students were standing around in the boys' bathroom, and then one of the large-chested female teachers walks in and walks up to the urinal to use it, and everyone's like, oh, what's she doing? And they look down, and she has a penis. And they keep referring to it as a
cock.
As a trunk, like an elephant's trunk.
Well, we all know it's a big cock.
And then by the end of that episode, all the boys are standing around in the bathroom looking at this huge-breasted teacher's penis.
Is it funny? Is it
no,
at least funny? Oh, okay.
No, it's not funny. That's the worst thing about this, is that if it were funny, okay, yes, like I could see, like, comedy is so subjective. I think comedy is the hardest thing to review because it's so subjective. For me, if it makes me laugh, it's good, period. Like, you know, that's it. This doesn't make me laugh, and that's its only purpose for being, is to be funny and to make someone laugh, and it's not funny. So okay. This show sucks. Like, I can't recommend it to anybody. You know?
Well, enjoy watching that one.
Yeah, just
3 minute episodes, though, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
I think there's only 12 episodes in this season for this, and I don't see it being ongoing. I can't.
There will probably never be a good anime with 3 minute episodes.
At least it's only 3 minutes. If I had to suffer through this for, like, you know, 20 or 30 minutes, I couldn't do it.
Okay, so I'm gonna do mine really fast. Hakenden, okay. 8 Dogs of the East. It's a bishy anime. There's a lot of pretty boys in it. One boy is actually described as being the most beautiful person in, like, the universe. It's kind of crazy. And then, so, years ago, a village burned down, and almost all the villagers were killed, except for one family, a girl and two boys. They came out of the fire or whatever, and they all have these crazy powers, the demonic powers. The one boy, Shino, has control over this bird called Murasame, who's basically a raven, but it can turn into like a sword, so he has this powerful sword, kind of like Inuyasha.
Mitsugi, I have a question.
What?
Through the fire and the flames, do they carry on?
They do. So the other Bishy guy has the power to turn into a wolf, and basically what happens is that the church wants the power, the church wants to get them into the church area so they can talk with them and whatnot. And so they kidnap the girl, and then so they go to get the girl back, and they're very angry, and they find out that they actually know the person who kidnapped them, so when they get there, they're all chummy, so it's all okay, and they weren't actually going to hurt the girl or anything like that. By the end of the third episode, the church has revealed why they wanted them to assemble in the Imperial Capital or whatever the hell you want to call it. And they say there are these eight, like, gems, eight pearls or whatever, and that's why it's called Eight Dogs of the East. And all of their last names have Inu in it, all of them. So Shino and the other dude each have one pearl, and so they're sent out on a mission to find the other six pearls. So that's the church wants to have the power or whatever it is. So they go. They're enlisted to go find this power. And then on the side, there's this group of monks that are clearly evil, and they are continuously trying to capture the power for themselves. So at one point during the first three episodes, they're torturing this demon guy, trying to take his power. They go after Shino to get his sword. But by the end of the third episode, they have been killed. At least one of the main bad guys was killed in their attempt to capture the demons, because the demon people are very powerful. So the show is not bad. It's beautiful. It looks very nice. It doesn't have any kind of crappy filler, moe, panty shot, tit jiggling type stuff in it. But as I said, most of the characters are male. So what do you know? Nothing from Cram. Okay.
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
So I tried to antagonize you, but
no, it's fine.
It's not bad. I'm not really sure where the story's going, because there really isn't an overarching antagonist at this point. It's kind of the church, but they don't really feel like... It's kind of the monk people, but they don't really feel like the main antagonist at this point, so I'm not really sure where the story's going, but I'm sure they're going to go off on this adventure where they find the other six pearl people, and then they're going to band together to fight some greater evil. That's what my impression is of the show, so... It's pretty good. I recommend it to people who like Bishy and some fantasy-type themes.
All right. Awesome. So my impression is on Chihayafuru Season 2. Chihayafuru Season 2, this is a short impression, because the best thing I can say is I reviewed the original season of Chihayafuru in episode 129. I gave it a 4 because this anime is fantastic. It's a really, really good anime. Season 2 basically keeps up everything from the first season. The end of the first season, it had a conclusion, but the conclusion really was kind of a to be continued. And I even said at the end of the first season that I thought the ending was really so-so, and that if it didn't get a second season, it was really truly a solid 4, and maybe even a 3.5, kind of the ending was just kind of so-so. But now that it has a second season and the story is continuing on, I am really, really hopeful. So, Chihayafuru, the story continues to follow Chihaya, who is Chihaya Ase, who has fallen in love with Karuta and now wants to become the Karuta queen in Japan. And she is continuing on that mission while running her school's Karuta Club. And this anime starts out with the Karuta Club presents to the first years coming into the school and, of course, has to get new members to stay alive. And it's kind of balancing the prerogatives of each of the club members and competitions. And it is kind of, I think this is one of the best shoujo shows to come out in a long time, because it's shoujo without being stupid. It's shoujo without being like over the top, like, oh my god, I love him and I love her and meh, 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 meh. But like, it's so good. It's character driven.
She's a hottie.
Yes, she's the sister of a model. Her sister's a model.
Yeah, she kind of looks like a model too.
Well, they call her Beauty in Vain because she has a one-track mind, and so nothing else kind of registers when she locks on to something. But it was based off of a manga that started in 2007. It's still ongoing, so who knows how long this series will actually end up being, because it doesn't seem like they're rushing through it, because there's been quite a little bit of a gap between the first season and the second season. That being said, they really don't do anything to summarize the first season. They really jump in and start right off the bat. There's a couple flashbacks kind of to put back the feelings, I feel like, more than summarize it. So, yes, Chihaya Fudu 2 is worth watching, but only if you've seen the first season. This is one of the few times that I will say, don't jump into the second season. It won't mean nearly as much to you. You might be able to get it, but it's not worth... If you want to watch it, watch the first season and watch it through. So, and of course, all the animation and music and stuff is equally as good as the first season. So, that takes us to our review time.
Yay, it's time for Professor Layton.
Yay! So, I figured this was an appropriate review given the fact that the whole theme for this episode is video games. This review that I'm doing is Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva. This movie came out back in 2009?
It's a funny-ass title.
Why?
Eternal Diva?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cram's laughing.
Starring Tina Turner.
Yeah, exactly.
I
have no idea what this could possibly be about.
It's about Professor Layton.
The other Professor Layton games are like The Mysterious Box, the Death Train, the all these like Indiana Jones type things, the skull or whatever.
I don't even know if I wouldn't akin Professor Layton to Indiana Jones.
Well, but he's going after like
I guess there's that archaeology aspect.
Yeah, archaeology things and then the Eternal Diva. We're gonna rescue Tina Turner's shoes. Where are they hidden? All right, just kidding.
So, this movie came out back in 2009 or so in Japan, and I was here in 2009, and I saw posters for it because I wanted to see it, and I just never got around to watching it, and then when we were doing this topic, I was like, I really want to watch this. I'm going to watch an anime because I want to watch it, because I haven't done that in a long time.
But you're watching Chihaya Fudu.
I am watching Chihaya Fudu, and that makes the world better. So the overall summary for the story, the whole story is kind of a flashback in that the first 5 or 10 minutes starts out introducing Luke and Layton, and kind of the world that they live in, and Layton solves a mystery, and it's, Layton, the Sherlock Holmes-esque character archetype, strikes again and solves the mystery, and then Luke is introducing his life and his relationship to Layton, and then which he's Layton's apprentice, basically. He calls himself a gentleman in training because Layton kind of does the a gentleman always does this and a gentleman never does that. It starts out introducing that, and then Layton finds a record or gets a record of a famous singer. And kind of does the, do you remember when we met this woman in person? And Luke was like, how could I forget? It was one of the first great mysteries we had together. And so everything else is technically a flashback, but it doesn't really feel like a flashback because they never flash forward to the future again. The future thing was just kind of a way to introduce Luke and Layton. So they are invited to an opera. Is where the story starts, and the Eternal Diva is one of Layton's previous students, because he really is a professor. He's a professor of archaeology and history and whatnot, and she's a previous student who is becoming a very famous opera singer, and they're invited to an opera that she is in, and the opera is about a lost city of Ambrosia, which is a one of those... I think my impression from it is it's one of those, like, Atlantis-esque cities that there is some evidence that a city like that existed at some point somewhere. So maybe a little more real to the world than Atlantis is to our world, but no one knows where it is or what happened to it. But as legend goes, they had a queen whom they loved dearly, and she fell ill. And when she fell ill and died, the cure for her was completed just after. But it wasn't a cure. It was a potion for eternal life. And so all of the city drank the potion for eternal life and waited for their queen to return through a reincarnation. And that's the story. At the end of the performance, Luke and Layton, of course, are like, bravo, bravo, and clapping. And no one else is clapping. I'm like, why isn't anyone else clapping? And it's because... they were the only ones out of the loop, apparently. The real entertainment for the evening was that the person who put on the opera promised that one person in the audience would be granted eternal life. And so, but the way that he decides that is, of course, through a number of puzzle challenges. So it's kind of cute because it's an homage to what the Leighton games are, and it's really cute because they number the puzzles that occur. But it's kind of, it's not too kitschy as it may sound, because it's kind of like for your first task to weed out, you know, who's worthy of this gift type of thing, do this in this amount of time. And so basically they follow through and end up solving the mystery of the lost city of Ambrosia and what eternal life really means. So I'll just be honest, kind of, I meant to start the review with this, but I'll just be honest about two things. One, I didn't expect this movie to be good. Based off the source material...
How can you expect a movie like this to be good?
I didn't expect it to be good. But two, I wanted to watch it because I'm a huge fan of the Professor Layton franchise. And I really like the games. And I think it's a fun little story. And I like puzzles myself, so...
I enjoyed the first half of the one Professor Layton game I played.
Yeah, the Professor Layton games are really solid, but only if you like puzzle games, obviously, because that's what they are. I watched it subtitled. There is a dub out, but I am not a crazy fan of the dub, because Luke is, like, London slums, like, Professor! Like,
so this came out, did this come out in the States, or did it come out in Europe?
It came out in Europe, I think it was Europe, or maybe, it got an English dub, for international release, but there is, I think, a Blu-ray and DVD with the English dub on it, so you can get that, I think, in some amount of localization that can play on a DVD player in the States, but, I mean, if you're a huge fan of dubs and you only like to watch things dubbed, then that does exist. But I'm just not a fan of it. The director is Masakazu Hashimoto, who has actually directed some other fairly famous stuff, like Jinro the Wolf Brigade, and most recently Toddy Toddy. So,
oh, wow. Interesting mix.
Yeah, right?
Three completely different shows.
The animation was done by PA Works, which also did the animation for the scenes in the games, which I think was really the only way they could have done it, because then the whole animation is very true in style and feeling to the games. It's very stylized, it's very Leighton style, but that's charming. Like, I wouldn't want it any other way. There is some CG thrown into the animation. It's noticeable, but it's not obtrusive to me. And I don't know if it's not obtrusive because I give it more leniency because it's based off of a game, so there's some kind of psychological aspect of, like, it's a video game, CG's okay, or what, even though there really isn't that much, like, CG-esque animation in the Leighton games. But it really wasn't too... Whenever I saw it on the screen, it was obvious enough that I noticed it as CG, but it wasn't so obvious that I went, oh, God, why? But otherwise, the animation was really good, and I really like the animation. As I mentioned before, the movie also retains all the terms of the game. It has all of the major characters that you would like from the game to be in the movie. It has their relationships down pat. None of the characters change. It does introduce some new characters for the sake of the story, which I like when they do that. It has, of course, Leighton and his geniusness and his gentlemanry and Luke and whatnot. But it's not necessarily a cast. The games aren't so deep that if you aren't familiar with them, you can't enjoy the cast. Because of the mystery elements to it, the pacing is well done. And there's, I would say, a little bit of guesswork on the viewer's end, but I know there are the types of people that when they watch a mystery movie or a mystery show, they like to try to figure it out with the characters. And it becomes a game for them as well. This only happens so-so. Each of the puzzles, I would say, are almost completely figure-outable, by the viewer, but the overall major story of what is the city of Ambrosia isn't really figure-outable by the viewer.
That's frustrating. That's what always, like, I know this sounds really strange, but that's what always frustrated me about watching Scooby-Doo. Is that there's, like, every episode is a mystery, but they're the stupidest mysteries because you can't... there's no, like, logic to why it ends up being the person is.
Yeah. And the reason why you can't figure out necessarily or can't exactly figure out the overall mystery is because Professor Layton has always kind of tied in a little bit of an element of supernatural to it. There's kind of that element of fantasy. I don't want to say steampunk, but kind of that, like, old world supernatural, like old world world fantasy-esque. And at the end, when you look back, you go, oh, okay, I get it. I see the pieces that lined up to fit that way. But there is kind of that final piece that's just kind of, this is the supernatural to the overall. But each of the puzzles, there were a few that I was like, huh, I figured that one out. So that's kind of fun. The story is simple and easy to follow. It's a relaxing watch. It's a fun watch. Because the pacing's good and because the characters are likable, it's easy to watch and it's nice watching. There are moments of action and some comedic moments, and then there are, of course, some moments that make you think, which are also kind of nice. But it's not so it's complex that, you know, you feel like you have to devote all of your attention to it. It would be great for a Sunday afternoon, but one of the things that I loved about it is there's something nostalgic about the feeling of the movie. Like, I could see myself watching this with, like, a 7 or 8 year old, like, niece or nephew, and them totally freaking out about it. And I know that may sound like I'm saying the movie is really immature, but I think of, like, really good, not to put on the level of Disney movies, but really good, like, kids movies where there's enough that adults enjoy it beyond just the nostalgia factor, but then there's also another level that kids get and kids really enjoy. And I could see, like, a young kid, like, running around the house being like, I'm a gentleman in training. So
they could be yelling worse things, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or be like, move aside, Luke, I'm Leighton's number one apprentice. So, I mean, I could see that really happening, and I definitely now have put it on the list of anime that I think could really get people into anime if they're younger. But that kind of potentially is my sole criticism about the movie. It is simple. I mean, it's based off of a puzzle game. What can you really expect them to do with
it? A lot. Okay.
But, I mean, it is simple, and it is more kind of fun, oh my god, it's Professor Layton, I mean, in a movie, than, like, some kind of deep message.
I mean, it's Professor Layton. Have you seen those eyes?
They should have gotten the writers from Sherlock on it.
They pierce your soul.
And that top hat, OMG.
If they had gotten the writers from Sherlock on it, on the script, and then gotten Benedict Cumberbatch to voice Layton,
then
Martin Freeman to voice Luke.
Oh, Martin Freeman, yeah.
Professor, you have your eyeballs are in your ears. Why is this?
All right. But anyways, overall for this movie, I'm going to give it 3 Leighton, the third puzzle out of 5. I'm going to give it the third puzzle out of 5. So 3 out of 5.
Did you get a high score on that puzzle?
Yeah. Duh.
I was so shitty at that Professor Layton game. I just didn't have the patience.
I remember when you were playing it, and this kid was so funny playing this game. He was like, fuck, the shit. anyways, don't go into it expecting anything amazing, but at 99 minutes, it's not exactly a long time commitment. It would be great to watch with younger anime fans. It's totally okay for viewers of any age, which is nice, while still being something substantial. You can watch an anime with your 8-year-old and not have to worry about panty shots. Yay!
I want to see Leighton's panties.
Wow. Well, there's always Christmas. Next year.
Adults can still enjoy it, and, you know, as I said, it's a must-see for Leighton fans. So, overall, yes, 3 out of 5. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good show, guys.
Yeah.
Good show. Woo! As always, you can find us at aaapodcast.com. We have blogs, forums, and everything else, trivia, that, you know, you want to bookmark it. You just want to bookmark it and go back to it every day. iTunes. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. And if you have the time, give us a text rating, because we love reading those. They make us smile. Facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast, where you can get invites to all of our upcoming episodes. Good questions to keep you thinking about anime all week. Also, our Twitter page, where we are tweeting photos from Japan, and where we broadcast live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. EST, ustream.tv/channel/anime-addicts-anonymous-podcast. But if you can remember aapodcast.com, you can have links to all of those. Thank you to those of you who join us on the Ustream. The show is made so much better by your presence.
Mm-hmm.
And taking us out tonight is the song Unknown Vision from the anime Mayu Mao Yusha by the artist Akino Arai. So, have a great one, everyone.
See ya.
See you next week, everybody.